the Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, and our show is all about integrative medicine for cancer. What does this mean? Well, for many years, people with cancer, in common with most other chronic conditions, have either accepted the offerings of conventional medicine, its strengths, but also its significant shortcomings, or if they have chosen to look outside the box at complementary or alternative medicine, they have inevitably been caught in the crossfire of a long-standing ideological war, with each side slagging off the other as quacks and murderers, leaving the poor patient confused and severely challenged to work out where to put their trust. Above all, it's generally been presented by both sides as an either-or choice. Integrative medicine has grown out of a realisation that this is not at all helpful to people with cancer, whose interest is not in the label attached to an approach, orthodox, alternative, etc., but only in whether it could help and how much it could help. Furthermore, it's clear that the either-or picture is based on an emotional attachment to one or the other view, and not on science. This is not a particularly reliable basis on which to proceed. The need for looking at approaches to treatment from the perspective of the person with cancer was the starting point for integrative medicine, the broadest possible view of available treatments and their potential to help in any given situation. And some of the most remarkable developments through taking this approach have been the synthesis of the cancer-killing abilities of conventional medicine, something many people need to stave off a crisis, with the protective, recuperative and health-promoting qualities of natural medicine. And if there's one message that integrative medicine has for people with cancer, it is that each and every person has an individual situation that needs responding to in a tailor-made way, and that there are now massive resources from across the whole spectrum of approaches from which to build an individual programme. Integrative medicine for cancer, or integrative oncology, is much further advanced in some other countries, and it's shameful that in the UK our repressive establishment holds back progress in this field despite the damning statistics for cancer incidence, cancer recurrence and, of course, cancer deaths. A small but determined band of integrative doctors fly the flag for progress towards a modern approach to cancer, so it's always heartening to hear of another doctor joining us to help. Dr. Bernard Willis is British, but most of his practice has been abroad. He's now in London part-time, and he brings his extensive experience of supporting people with cancer. I took the opportunity to speak with him on one of his recent visits. Good afternoon, Bernie. Thanks very much for coming on the Yes to Life show.
You're welcome.
So, you've had experience of working in several different parts of the world. I take a bit of an interest in what's going on in integrative medicine internationally, but it's hard to make a realistic comparison of healthcare in different countries based just on the media. The way it looks to me is that although we in the UK have the benefit of free healthcare for all, something that few would criticise, the flip side is that we also have a gargantuan beast of a system that's almost impossible to change substantially, that was cutting edge when it arrived about 70 years ago, but it's now desperately out of sync with an evolving society in which individual choice is seen as our human right. Alongside that, a repressive establishment keeps more progressive approaches that are outside the NHS sharply in check, making a mockery of people's right to make their own choices as to how they keep themselves well. Do you think this is a fair assessment of the situation here, and how do you think UK healthcare compares with others that you've worked within?
I think it's pretty indicative of any healthcare in civilised countries. I've just come back from New Zealand, where exactly the same problem existed. You have a mainstream sort of set-in-stone philosophy, modality, which hasn't changed over the years. And although it's a bit like a drip feed, it is getting slowly into the medical schools. The fact that nutrition is important, and, you know, lifestyle is important, but it's just the tiny tip of the iceberg, really.
Right. So you don't think we're particularly worse off here?
No. I mean, there in Auckland, where I work, there are about, I suppose, 15 or 20 doctors like myself, people who use functional medicine techniques and treatments. And all of us at one time or another have been investigated by the Medical Council of New Zealand. So they don't like what we do because we get people better.
Okay? Right.
And also we're seeing people that they have failed. I think the National Health Service here and in New Zealand where I was and to some extent other countries where I've heard of, the ambulance is at the bottom of the cliff. That's the problem. The ambulance needs to be at the top of the cliff. And we've got to find prevent disease before they happen. And we've also got to find other treatments for disease other than drugs. Drugs have failed miserably over the years. Mm. They're okay if you have a heart attack or a road accident, you want painkillers. Wonderful, they put you together like a jigsaw brilliantly with added drugs. But for chronic disease, a waste of hundreds and billions of pounds. Because nobody gets better. You take a drug and that'll give you side effects. You go back to the doctor, tell him about the side effects. Oh, he'll give you another drug for that. Okay, and then eventually, you know, the drugs you're taking don't work, and you need other drugs, or the doses increases. And in the end, there's a lot of research now that shows that pharmaceutical drugs actually cause dementia as time goes on.
Right. And of course, as you say, that's the same picture the world over, because of course the same drugs are for sale everywhere.
And Big Pharma is very powerful.
It is indeed. Okay, so you're British, but you spent most of your working life in other countries. I'm pleased to let our listeners know that you're about to return and live and work in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
We're desperately short of doctors with experience and understanding of integrative medicine, particularly for cancer. Can you tell us what you plan to be able to offer people looking for cancer support?
Well, I'm trying at the moment to build up a clinic in Weymouth Street. Okay, I'm coming down for one day every month, but as time goes on, hopefully that will build up. And I don't want to work too much because I've retired now, so I'm going to just, you know, but for cancer support, I can do what I learned treating cancer patients in the last 5 years in New Zealand. I can talk to them about how they can prevent cancer coming back if they've had cancer, how they deal with the cancer, how they change their lifestyle, their nutrition, their mindset, and obviously various natural supplements you can use to help support the immune system while it's fighting cancer. I think when I researched the book that you and I are doing, I found that the 340 or 350 researched, recognised treatments, alternative, or you know, non-pharmaceutical treatments, the right words, non-pharmaceutical treatments for cancer.
Mm. Okay, so you describe yourself as an integrative medicine practitioner. It's an increasingly common description, but one that at this point means different things to different people.
Yes.
So can you tell us what you understand by integrative medicine?
It's a doctor who has more than one string to his bow, really. I was trained as a conventional mainstream GP,
mm-hmm.
and stayed that way until about 25, 30 years ago, when I was in Spain at the time running some clinics for the expats over there. And I was working sort of 12 hours a day and not coming on holidays, getting up during the night. And I crashed out, I burnt out. And I picked up a virus called cytomegalovirus. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's a very important. It actually can lead to cancer later in life.
Mm.
I developed chronic fatigue syndrome and had to take a year off work. Okay. During that time, I came over to England and saw specialists in Harley Street, and you know, no one had anything to offer in terms of getting me better, apart from antidepressants. And I said to them, look, you know, I'm not depressed, I'm just depressed because I'm bloody tired, I can't get better.
Mm.
I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. And so in the end, in those days there was no internet, so I staggered down to the medical library in the north side of medicine. And you know, I spent hours and hours in there going through natural treatments for you know CMV and fatigue and generally how to do it yourself really. And I became sort of took control of my own health. And eventually, it took me a year and a half. It's about a year before I could work.
Mm.
And then since then, that's what that was the light that switched on, the light switch that made me realise that you know there's much more to medicine than drug.
Mm. Well, that was quite a quick turnaround compared to a lot of people, of course, who suffer from those things who have them for years, and they
They can do
so you do.
But I mean, if you get a good protocol for chronic fatigue syndrome, most of the top people in the world who treat it, usually 75% of them get better within 2 years.
Mm. Right. So that was the kind of turning point for you where you began to look at the comparison between natural medicines and drugs very seriously and the ways in which each were appropriate, if you like, for
absolutely.
Health.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so you'd also say that you're a functional medicine practitioner.
Yeah.
You just said that earlier on.
Yeah.
So can you tell us exactly what you mean by functional medicine and what its aims and methods are?
Okay. Well, functional medicine is a bit like changing the washer in a leaky tap. You don't just put a bucket underneath it, you don't change the wash. It's looking for it's going beyond symptoms. It's beyond symptom treatment. Okay, at the moment in this country, there's a national ill service rather than national health service. The doctors treat symptoms. What we do with functional medicine is look beyond those symptoms. It's a bit like a tree, you know, a tree that grows out of the ground. That tree is conventional medicine. Each branch is a disease: cancer, diabetes, heart disease, Alzheimer's, whatever. And then you look down, what we do, we look down below the ground, look at the roots, and find out where those things are coming from. The root cause is what we're looking for. And then once you deal with that root cause, you can actually reverse autoimmune disease and other disease too. You know, I've seen this happen a lot in my patients. So, and then what you do then, you're actually targeting the treatment to that individual patient, because every patient is different. So there's no one size fits all. Right? One patient with rheumatoid arthritis may have heavy metal toxicity. Another one may have a bug in his gut. Another one may, you know, have a terrible problem with stress. So these are things that you have to look for the cause and find and then deal with that cause. And then you're halfway to actually curing or reversing the disease.
Hmm. So maybe you say a little bit about how you go about finding those actual causes.
Hmm. Okay.
It's a bit trickier.
Well, no, I've been doing it for a long time. So no.
Okay.
Yeah, well, obviously you take a first thought, you take a full history from the patient. You need to know what they're doing, you know, what they're eating, okay, what the lifestyle is, what they're thinking, how much stress they're under, what the hormones are like, and what the gut's like, how they're pooing. You know, all of these things are important. And then we can do some specialised testing to look at the main causes of disease. Cancer, autoimmune. The first one is toxicity. 20% of cancer is due to toxicity, and that's, you know, the chemicals that we all bathe in every day. We can't escape it.
Mm.
And also, of course, you look at the heavy metal toxicity that we all breathe: mercury from fillings, mercury from fish, lead, aluminium, titanium is now becoming very popular, nickel. These are all things that can damage the body's immune system and allow cancer to develop. And other autoimmune diseases too. Then you have, that's toxicity one, then you have to look at the gut, because now that most of us think that all disease starts in the gut.
Yes.
You've heard that
about the gut, yes.
Yeah. And the gut now is the second brain too, because most of the bacteria in the gut actually influence what goes on in our brain.
Mm.
We've got 2 kilograms of little critters down there, little devils that are very important for us.
Yes.
Matter of fact, they don't rely on us to live. We rely on them.
Yes.
We're sort of parasites on them rather than the other way around. Mm. Thank goodness they're not as big as we are. We've been in trouble.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting turnaround. Very many of the people I've talked to start talking about the gut.
Yes.
Gut health these days.
Yes. We think it's the source of many diseases. I've got a patient at the moment who's got severe rheumatoid arthritis. And he was on steroids and immune-reducing drugs, and he wasn't getting better. So we did a stool test to see what's going on in his stool. It's called a comprehensive digestive stool analysis. This is one of the most important functional medicine testing.
Mm-hmm.
This goes off to a laboratory in America, Dr. Stater, and they look at everything from the mouth down to the anus. They look at digestion. They look at good guys, bad guys in your gut, good bacteria, bad bacteria, and look, see if there's any sort of unwanted guests in there, you know,
yeah.
Things like parasites and bad bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, a friend of mine from Spain, we found he had something called Klebsiella pneumoniae.
Yeah,
it's a nasty bug in his gut. So you pick it up from contaminated water. You travel over them, you pick up this water. And we think now that that's, that can damage the gut, okay? Allow the gut to become leaky. Have you heard of leaky gut syndrome?
Yes.
And that, what that does, that allows toxins from the bacteria to go through the gut into the bloodstream. And then the bloodstream, the body looks at this, what is this foreign material? Attacks it with antibodies, And sometimes these toxins and the proteins, they look like the actual cells of the body. We call it molecular mimicry,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so the body can't distinguish it, you know, the body cells from this toxin. So that's why in rheumatoid arthritis, you know, the proteins look like the body joint tissue. The body sends in antibodies against joint tissue, inflammation, arthritis. And you know, thyroid is different. The proteins in the blood look like thyroid proteins, so the body attacks it and you get thyroid inflammation. So, you know, there's a whole range of we call it gut dysbiosis, you know, mm-hmm. imbalance of bacteria in the gut, which can trigger off autoimmune disease and other disease and cancer too. And then we look at, obviously, we then look at any food allergies, the diet. 20% of cancer is diet related, as you know, people you're talking to.
Absolutely.
So you have to obviously make sure that you know, they're having an anti-cancer diet. Now, anti-cancer diet is not a one-size-fits-all. A wonderful cancer specialist called Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez in the States, you heard of him?
Yes.
Died recently of a heart attack.
Yes.
Sad loss. Right. But he was getting great results from cancer patients with using large doses of enzymes. Okay? And with those enzymes, he had a regime of different diets for different cancers. And he got it worked out as which diets were best for which cancers. So it's not all just a matter of eating fruit, vegetables, lots of other things too that you have to take into account.
Yes, it's interesting. It's one of the subjects that pops up on this show quite often is the difference between the one-size-fits-all camp and the no, you have to actually give different things to different types of people.
We're all different. You know?
Yeah.
Your requirements are different. Your gut bacteria are different from mine. Your requirements are different from mine. And to try and treat everybody, try and fit every size 5 into a size 9 shoes or the other way around is a bit stupid, really, isn't it?
It is. Hmm. Well, let's now just talk a bit more about food. There's a lot of debate, like on the social media forums and places, about the relationship between food as medicine and then the use of supplements. These are two different approaches, if you like, and particularly in cancer. So I'd like to hear what your opinion is of the place of each of these in restoring health. When do you move from one to the other, or when do they need both, or, you know?
I think food, from my point of view, quite a lot of experience dealing with cancer patients, is better for prevention than actual treatment. Okay? Mm-hmm. If you can eat foods which are high in these wonderful phytochemicals, these different coloured chemicals that are actually, you know, antioxidant, they help cancer cells to die. They promote something called apoptosis in the body, which is cancer cells destroying themselves, self-destructing. These are things like obviously green vegetables. Red vegetables, fruits, curcumin is wonderful, spiced curcumin. Things that contain quercetin, things that contain isoflavones, these are things from soya, are very good. Resveratrol, quercetin, all of these are very important natural phytochemicals which occur in plants. But when you want to use those to treat some cancer, then I think you've got to go into supplements because you need in my experience, you need a much higher dose, which you can't get from. You can't eat, you know, 2 kilos of red peppers every day, you know.
you can try.
So that's when I use secondary supplementation.
Let's see. And you would just say you've got somebody who's wants to stay healthy, would you be recommending supplements to them as well, or would you say that actually no, they should choose their foods carefully? And
I think that's the main thing. If the problem about, again, it depends on where they're getting their food from, you know.
Yes, exactly.
If you get organic fruit vegetables, obviously they're going to be much more healthy. They're going to be grown in good soil, hopefully. They're not going to be covered with pesticides, fertilizers. And also the same applies to meat and fish. But if you're not doing that, then I think, you know, supplements are good. I'm not a great fan of multivitamin, there's too little of anything in any multivitamin, in my experience, to do much good. Most of us now who deal with cancer prevention don't like particularly use multis. We prefer either to get the nutrients from the food itself or to use them targeted individually.
And what about...
Based on testing.
Right. Yeah, okay, so it's more specific where you're giving the person based on their actual need,
yes,
rather than just saying take a bit of everything because it's bound to do you good.
That's shotgun therapy.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah, and how about supplements that are made from food rather than being individual ingredients? Are they something you use at all?
Yes, we know now that a lot of supplements are in capsules and have fillers in them and which are not sometimes good to absorb. For instance, magnesium, I found is very hard to absorb through a capsule or a tablet because of the fillers. I've done you know, read some magnesium levels in people taking magnesium supplements, and they don't seem to get the level up.
Right.
So I like now to use magnesium either in, as you say, ionic liquid form,
mm-hmm.
And now can they actually get down to almost to the individual cells of molecules of magnesium, or transdermal magnesium. Do you know about magnesium oil?
Wonderful. I know about magnesium cream.
Oil cream. If you put it, say 6 or 7, I prefer the oil because I think it penetrates better.
Mm.
If you put 6 or 7 sprays of magnesium oil on your skin, you're going to get 150 milligrams of magnesium into your body without any problem about absorption, you know.
Right.
Because the mantra is, of course, you are what you eat, but that's not true, really. We absorb.
Yeah, what you can absorb.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can also get some magnesium from bathing in Epsom salts.
Epsom salt baths, wonderful. Yeah. And if you put some bicarb of soda in as well, it's even better.
So you get a bit of alkalization at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you could tell us the key aspects of cancer and cancer treatment that you find that supplements can help with, and how they help.
The way I tend to support cancer patients is by using things that boost the immune system.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's your immune system's going to cure your cancer, not your cut burn and poison. That's not going to happen. So I use things that science has shown boost the immune system. Firstly, mushrooms.
Right.
Mushrooms. Any kind of mushrooms, particularly reishi or maitake, they have been shown to increase something in the body called natural killer cells, which go around. They're like Pac-Man. They go around the bloodstream, eating up cancer cells. So that's one thing, and every single different fruit or vegetable has different antioxidant in it, a different phytochemical, they're called. Okay, and they some of them actually reduce the oxidant damage from cancer. Some of them stop cancer developing new blood vessels. Some of them help make the environment around the cancer cell incompatible for the cancer. Some of them actually make the cancer cell self-destruct. So these are all very important things. And you can tailor make your supplements also to particular kinds of cancer. We know that certain supplements will be better in some kinds of cancer than others. Yeah. So it's not as, your question is not as, not, I can't it's answer it simply as it was stated.
There's a lot of variables.
Yeah. But again, you're looking at the type of cancer, the stage of the cancer, and the patient.
Right. But when it comes to the immune boosting side, of course, that applies to any patient with cancer.
Yes. Yeah. So some have need more immune boosting than others.
Yeah.
Because we all have different immune systems and different states. One of the most important things that I found in treating cancer over the years is the mind-body connection.
Right.
I don't know whether you realise that the mind and the state of the mind can switch on and off cancer genes.
Mm.
Yeah. And we think now that maybe 20% of cancer is to do with stress, the mind, not particularly stress, but repressed emotions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's quite high, isn't it? It's higher than I've heard people put it at. Yeah. Generally. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's higher than people. I find I worked very closely with a mind body specialist in Auckland, and he did a lot of research, and he found that about most of his cancer patients had anger issues, resolved anger.
Mm.
Yeah. Either something has not done something they wanted in their life, or someone has done something they didn't want to in their life,
right.
And they've kept that bottle up inside them, and that attacks the immune system and makes cancer more likely. And what he does, he releases his emotions for them. He gets them through doing affirmations and special programs to get rid of the emotions.
Mm.
And he even hypothesized that, if somebody has cancer on the left side, it's due to a woman that's upset you. And if people have cancer on the right side, it's due to a man that's upset you. So I'm not sure that's been actually proved, but it's
it's interesting theory. One of me.
Interesting theory.
Yeah. So as part of one of your protocols, then, you would always introduce the idea of a cancer patient having a consultation of that type. To find out whether...
I do it myself, so I would ask them specifically,
I see.
Go through the emotions with them, anger, guilt, fear, shame, the usual ones that people have inside them from the past life.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's certainly important. It's certainly an entirely ignored aspect of treatment within mainstream medicine.
Yeah.
But
and the important thing, you can do all these things together, you know.
Yeah.
Why withhold one treatment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
We should be combining with mainstream to do everything possible for the patient.
Absolutely.
Including, you know, chemo when it's necessary.
Yeah.
But there's no reason. I mean, the oncologist will say you can't use these natural things with chemo, and that's a load of rubbish. It just hasn't been proven.
No.
That you can't take vitamin C, for instance, you know, before chemo, or, you know, it's a fallacy.
Yeah, well, that's quite important. Maybe we just talk a bit more about that, because, of course, yes, I mean, there's two responses generally in this country, unless you consult Professor Robert Thomas, who I've just broadcast.
Well, that was interesting.
It was interesting. He's the one oncologist in Britain who will go through your supplement program with you. I don't know of another one, but generally,
does he take patients off them?
Yeah, if it was inappropriate, but he is very supportive of
okay. Fantastic. There are a few of those around.
Yeah. And we could do with more of them. But anyway, the response is generally no. That's the most common response. You don't take anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Don't take it. Or I haven't got a clue is the other one, you know, which is less common. And neither of those are very helpful. First one, because it's not true and it's not based on any real science. And the second one, obviously, isn't much help. Just left in the dark. So,
well, he should look at the about 400 studies done on curcumin alone. They're out there. Yeah. The people in the mainstream, they will not accept anything that hasn't been through a sort of double-blind controlled clinical trial of 2,000 patients.
Mm.
But you can't do that kinds of patients, because you have to give half a placebo. You can't treat cancer patients with placebos.
Wow.
So it's not going to happen, but the research is out there. I don't prescribe anything that's not been thoroughly researched. I use evidence-based therapy.
Mm. So the facts are that there are a few things that you shouldn't do while you're having chemotherapy, say, or radiotherapy. There are some things which definitely do conflict, but most don't, in fact.
Yes.
And that people who are looking to, you know, are interested in supporting themselves at the same time, obviously, if they're not getting satisfactory answers from their oncologist, they need to find a proper integrative doctor to find out exactly what is safe and what isn't.
Well, that's right, because you, generally speaking, mainstream GPs listen to the mainstream oncologists, so a lot of them, you're not going to get much help from those either, in my experience.
No.
Or yours too.
Yes. Okay, so we were talking a little while ago about boosting the immune system, and I know that one of the substances you've worked with a lot and are very keen on is GC-MAF.
Yeah.
GC-MAF's been in the news in Britain because it got axed very suddenly when a lot of people were depending on it. I think there's some further news on that front now, but maybe you'd like to say a bit about your experience of it and the ways in which it's been able to help. And why you favour it, and then what you understand is going to happen going forward.
Hmm. Well, that's a bit in the air, but yeah, I've used GC-MAF for about 4 or 5 years. There was a clinic in Auckland that actually supplied it to me. GC-MAF is a protein. It's a stimulator of macrophages. These are cells that white cells that eat up cancer and disease in the body, and when it's combined with vitamin D. It has a very powerful effect on the immune system. And they have a protocol for GC-MAF. You can give it by, nowadays, you can do it by, give it by drops, you can give it by, they mix it into a yogurt, you can give it by a suppository, you can have a spray, or you have an injection. In quite severely ill patients, I was using IV in Auckland. Mm. And also, if you've got a subcutaneous lump somewhere, if you've got a lymph gland, you can actually inject it into the lymph
straight into it.
Straight into it, yeah. And that was also a very effective treatment. And what you do, you combine it with the protocol from Italy, which I think has been accepted for use with GC-MAF, is you combine it with large doses, mega doses of vitamin D, mega doses of oral vitamin C, preferably in the liposomal form, nearly.
Yes.
Yeah. And the ketogenic diet.
So that's a whole protocol there.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so just to be clear, so that everybody understands, so the liposomal vitamin C is the type that's been developed in order to enable people to take a much higher dose by mouth.
Yes, it's dissolved in little spherical is a body fat called phospholipids. These go through the cell membrane and take the vitamin C with it. So it's a much, much better way of absorbing vitamin C.
So it enables you to absorb it quickly. So you can take a certain amount of vitamin C and you end up with much more in your system and less of it ends up in the toilet. Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly. Well put.
Okay, so that's right.
Nowadays, I mean, the liposomal technology has taken over. Now we can get, you get liposomal curcumin, you get liposomal glutathione. These are all easy ways of, much better ways of getting into the body.
Yeah, particularly if your system is a bit defunct, i.e. you're not absorbing that well.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so that's interesting. So you've got a whole protocol there, ketogenic diet as well.
Yes.
Maybe you want to say a bit about why the ketogenic diet is part of that protocol?
Yeah. Well, the ketogenic diet, as it had a lot of research done recently, in not just cancer, but also for neurodegenerative disease. It was first used in epilepsy.
Right.
Many years ago, and what it does, it's just very low calorie diet. You take glucose almost out of the diet. You test your blood to make sure that your glucose is very low, and you put your body into something called ketosis. In other words, instead of using glucose as fuel, use ketones as fuel. Now, ketones are wonderful food for the brain. Our brain and our bodies can actually survive on ketones. We don't actually need carbohydrates. It's a fallacy. We don't actually need carbohydrates. We love them because they're nice, but we don't actually need them to survive. We can live on fats and protein. And there's a chap called Otto Warburg and another chap called Seyfried, who've written books about the cancer effect of glucose. And cancer cells love glucose. They feed on glucose. They ferment glucose. And they live by fermentation rather than glycolysis. And what happens when you give them ketones, of course, they wither up and die. They can't survive. But you have to... The problem with a ketogenic diet in a cancer patient who's perhaps losing weight already is that they tend to lose more weight. So you're giving them something called MAP, M-A-P. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of this?
No.
This is a collection of essential amino acids called master amino pattern. And this is just taking 6 tablets in the morning, with or without a breakfast, and it gives you more protein in those tablets. Very accessible, very well absorbed protein than a whey powder or a steak or anything else.
Mm.
And because if you take some meat, for instance, in the morning, eggs, and only, I don't know the exact figure, but only a small proportion is actually going to get into the body.
Interesting. Okay, so that's something that can accompany a ketogenic diet, and it doesn't compromise the diet in any way, but it means that they're less likely to lose weight.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And that complete protocol you described, you've taken patients through that, have you? Mm-hmm.
Often you
found it successful in a wide range of types of cancer.
I think it was really brought down originally for brain cancer. It's probably more successful for brain cancer than any other cancer, but it works. The results they've got from Europe, just go to the gcmath.eu website and you'll find lots of good research there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pity that it was banned in this country, and they raided the labs in Guernsey, I think it was, wasn't it?
I'm not sure exactly.
But there is a source opened up in Europe now. I can't remember the name of the company to do it now, but it's if you just Google it.
Yeah, so it's going to become available in the UK again from a new source.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's
But
great.
It's not cheap, so of course these are things that National Health will never pay for.
Mm. And one of the things that's often talked about as being combined with those kind of approaches is using hyperbaric oxygen.
Yes.
Is that something that you have an experience in working with?
There's a recent research in stage 3 or stage 4 cancer patients, the ketogenic diet plus hyperbaric oxygen with great effect. Yeah, it is. It's I don't know whether it's available here in London.
The H part is available all over the country. Fortunately, we're very lucky that the MS centres here, they all have them.
Yeah,
and it's a sort of whole resource for cancer patients that we've really only found about. If we've become aware of it at Yes to Life in the last few years. And suddenly, it's not even expensive to do.
Yeah.
It's a great treatment. An awful lot of these centres, they were there just for MS patients, but they've become aware that actually these tanks can help an awful lot of other people, including cancer patients, and so they're beginning to open their doors a bit wider. And it means their facility gets used more. So
that's wonderful.
It's great for them. It's great for people with cancer.
Yeah, most of us who deal with cancer know that cancer doesn't like oxygen.
Right.
You know, and so I wasn't have access to HBOS in Norton, but I was using ozone,
right?
And I was using intravenous hydroxide, both of which knock off lose an oxygen atom,
right?
And cancer doesn't like oxygen, so the cancer tends to self-destructive using the oxygen. Mm.
Those are alternative ways, aren't they, of getting oxygen into the system?
And even beyond vitamin C does that, because vitamin C in high doses, mega doses, I'm talking about sort of 80-90 grams intravenously,
mm-hmm.
Turns into hydroxide in the body, and that hydroxide will then lose the oxygen atom. That's how vitamin C works. Right. It becomes it's an antioxidant in small doses, it becomes a pro-oxidant in high doses.
Right.
That's how it kills cancer cells.
So it's a kind of chemotherapy once you give it in high dose in a way, only it doesn't do you in at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Integrative medicine clearly runs in your family. As you know, I recently interviewed Nikki Williams, your daughter.
That's right.
And we were talking about hormones and cancer. And I know that's, she spoke about it very authoritatively, but I know that you also have a great interest in hormones. Of course, you clearly are very interested in cancer, and there's a strong relationship between those two things. Can you tell us what you see that integrative medicine has to offer both women and men with hormone-driven cancers?
Yeah. First of all, I think you've got to do some basic testing. Okay. You've got to find out what the hormone levels are. If a man with prostate cancer has got high levels of estrogen, that's dangerous, because it's estrogen that fuels prostate cancer. Mm. So you can actually, funnily enough now, I probably get struck off if the gentleman council heard this, but they're now treating prostate cancer in the States with testosterone.
Hmm.
Because it's not testosterone that causes prostate cancer, we know now. Because all the young bucks in the motorcycles would have it if that was the case.
Exactly.
It's when we get to our age, I'm sorry, I'm a bit older than you, but something. I'll include you.
I'm getting on.
As we get to our age, what happens is our testosterone levels drop. And our estrogen level goes up.
Right.
This is why, you know, men can turn into women as they get older. They get the man boobs and all that. That's due to excess estrogen. And what that can do, that fuels prostate cancer. And in women, of course, it fuels breast cancer.
Mm.
So what I like to do is check on the hormone levels. You can do it through urine, you can do it through saliva, you can do it through blood, and find out what's going on. And if they're high in estrogen, you can use estrogen blockers to do that. Either natural ones, so things like I3C or DIM, from plants can actually learn, or you can actually use some drugs to do that,
right.
And they're quite safe drugs. So you can do that, and I always like to make sure a man with prostate cancer, I've got plenty of zinc, because zinc is important, plenty of selenium, these are all important, and I'm quite inclined to give them testosterone.
Mm. Okay, so you work with nature-identical hormones?
They're called bio-identical hormones. These are hormones that actually belong in the body. So
right, so that would, this testosterone would be a bio-identical hormone you're
absolutely
working with? Yeah, but you use others as well?
Yes, I mean, there are two hormones in women that actually have been shown, have been actually shown to benefit women who have had breast cancer and actually reduce the risk of breast cancer for women who haven't. One is testosterone itself. Progesterone is anti-proliferative. It stops cancer cells developing. And certain types of estrogen, there are three estrogens in the body, and there's one called estriol, which is very potent anti-cancer. It stops the bad estrogens turning into triggering cancer cell growth. So you can use those, certainly.
Mm.
And you always say, if they've got too much estrogen, you want to make sure that they're detoxing properly, getting rid of the estrogen from the body. You can give them quite a few supplements to do that as well. Make sure the liver's working properly.
Right.
Because, I mean, these organs have got to get out of the body, haven't they?
Mm.
So you've got to get rid of them.
Yeah. So just maybe you can explain. There seem to be two things here. One of them is the level of any particular hormone.
Yes.
And the other one is about the balance between that and some other one or some other ones, yeah?
Exactly.
And it seems like, well, you can take the approach of trying to suppress one of them, or you can actually introduce some more of another one. And are they a similar thing to do in terms of...
It's all about balance. Somebody once said we need hormone harmony in our body. And that's absolutely right. There are about 16, 17 different hormones in the body, and for us to function normally, they have to be in balance. So it's all about balance. So yeah, if you've got, for instance, if a woman has uterine cancer or breast cancer or even ovarian cancer, it's probably likely, other things considered, that she's high in estrogen, estrogen dominant. And this has happened more and more these days because I think, as we briefly spoke before we went on air, that we are surrounded with estrogen chemicals, hormone-disrupting chemicals. There's a group in the States called the Environmental Working Group who published a list of the top 10 dirty dozen hormone disruptors. And they include things like dry cleaning stuff, plastics, DDT, phthalates from cosmetics, underarm deodorants, plastics. Yeah, all of these things have a estrogen effect on the body. And this is why we think that young girls are going to puberty much earlier and men are losing their fertility because of these estrogen effects damaging them, contracting testosterone in men.
Yes, I mean, it's many decades ago they found out this thing about crocodiles. I seem to remember in the States, was it, or Canada, where they're actually the amount of plastic that had gone into this massive estuary over a long period meant that the crocodiles were actually infertile.
I don't remember that, but that's
an early alarm. That was as to the effects of plastic.
Well, they've taken blood from the umbilical cord of newborn babies and found 241 different chemicals in it.
Right.
That's even before it sets foot on the earth. So we live in a very toxic
bad
world.
Bad start.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there seems to be a different situation with some of these things. Some of these chemicals, at least, there are ways we can actually get them out of our system. There are known ways of chelating these from the system, you know, heavy metals or whatever it is. That doesn't seem to be the case for all of them. I was talking to a lady recently for a show about breast implants, which made of silicon. Well, you know, this silicon, as one doctor who removes these things regularly because of problems, he says, well, look, you know, a certain amount of that stuff is in their body and they've got no idea where it is or what it's doing or how to get it out.
No. I mean, something for lead, for instance, stays in your body all your life, in the bones.
Right.
So if you're going to get rid of lead, you've got to chelate for all your life.
Really? Right.
This is the problem with it. And there are lots of chemicals that we don't even know exist. Mm. They're discovering new ones every day. And so, you know, we not only don't know what they are, we don't know how to get rid of them.
And they're
a big cause of cancer.
But on the plus side, whatever's in there, the one thing we can be sure we can do, which is positive, is, of course, is to keep our immune system in the best possible shape and to keep our nutritional levels as high as possible so
absolutely
we have all the resources to deal with any problems.
Don't forget, too, we've got to exercise.
Yeah.
We've got to keep stress under control.
Yeah.
We not to get to, you know, keep our emotional issues out in the open. It's a combined thing.
It's a
multifactorial.
Yes, yes. Okay. Is there anything else particularly you'd like to talk about?
Just about some recent research about a super cocktail that they did research on the Louisiana State University.
Okay.
And they produced this super cocktail of phytochemicals.
Oh, yeah.
There were six of them now. Let me see if I can remember them now. One was curcumin.
Of course.
One was quercetin.
Yeah.
One was resveratrol.
Mm-hmm.
One was genistein.
Genistein, right.
From soy.
Mm-hmm.
And another one was grapeseed extract.
Right.
And I think there's one more missing. Anyway. What they did, they mixed this cocktail up and gave it to breast cancer cells in the laboratory. They call them lines, the lines of cells. And they found this cocktail killed 80% of breast cancer cells. And this preparation is not yet available for commercial use. But of course, you can take all these things separately.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, or get them in food.
Well, Professor Thomas, who I mentioned earlier, he's actually developed, he's done some proper double-blind trials with natural supplements made from food, and he's got a supplement produced especially for this, which has got four ingredients.
Okay.
He's done this with prostate, and he's just shown what then keeps the prostate in it. The PSA in check, basically. All the people are on watchful waiting. Well, don't just sit there doing nothing. Take this stuff.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good research about pomegranate, certainly,
yeah,
for prostate cancer.
Yeah. So He's actually done the trial to show that this stuff is worth taking, which is great. It doesn't mean they're going to get it on the NHS, of course.
But I drink the juice every day.
You're right.
Put it in my smoothie in the morning.
Yeah. No. So, as you say, there's a mountain of evidence to show that these things are just worth having as part of your overall lifestyle.
Sure. Particularly as they have no side effects.
Mm, exactly. Yeah. Only positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, thanks very much. I'm really delighted that we can welcome you to the shores of the UK here. As I mentioned earlier, there's a desperate shortage of people like you here, people with long experience who really know what it takes to deal with cancer, which is such a complex and difficult disease. So thanks very much indeed for coming on the show and introducing yourself to the British public and for sharing your views.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Enjoyed it.
Full details of how you can contact Dr. Willis, along with other links related to the show, are, as usual, on the Yes to Life site. Go to yestolife.org.uk, yestolife, yestolife.org.uk, click the link to Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar, and then choose UK Health Radio. Next week's show will be about an approach mentioned in today's show, Hyperbaric Oxygen Therapy, or HBOT for short. I shall be visiting an MS centre where they have a hyperbaric oxygen tank, speaking to all those involved and even having a go myself. So I hope you're able to listen again. Goodbye. Thank you.